The Web's Michael Smith. It's episode 62 of the Canes Cast, and I only have one question for you.
What's that?
Where's October gone?
It is almost November. We're, what, a week away from the second full month of the 2018-19 regular season, and the folks loading in the concert down on the floor of PNC Arena are not doing us any favors as we are recording this. So if you hear some background noise, that's all that is.
It's just Nat sound. We're good with it.
Yeah, it's Nat sound.
Just go with that.
It's like we're at a hockey practice, but it's not a hockey practice at all. It's a concert load-in.
Yeah, it's what the good folks at the PNC Arena and their changeover crews do. Magnificent job. We never give them enough credit, from Craig Stover, Arena Operations Director, to Jared Dupree, who is the Iceman, to, I mean, we can run down the list of every name. One day maybe we will do that on Canes Cast.
To Bill Berniston, who has nothing to do with the changeover crew.
But
although, I think we're obligated to mention his name.
Although you are, in fact, correct with all of that.
Yes.
So we're good. I don't know if there's going to be a moment in this episode where we tell Bernie. Did I just call him Bernie?
Yeah, I think so.
Hey, Bernie.
New nickname.
Where we tell Bill Berniston, thanks for listening. So
that might be.
Not a new nickname. All right, let's get to the good stuff, Michael. After three games where everybody in Canes land was pulling out their hair and saying this is the exact same thing that we've seen, and why are all of the power play and penalty killing units bad, they go into Detroit, get two power play goals. Penalty killers come up with two huge kills in the third period, and they skate out with a win. And the Hurricanes, after nine games, are 5-3-1 and still sitting in first place in the Metro Division. So let's recap. Things are never as bad as people think they are, but there are still things that really need to be worked on, and there are legitimate concerns with the Carolina Hurricanes right now through nine games. But that's pretty much the case, I would say, with everybody not named Nashville, it feels like, at this point in the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you'd ask any club around the league, even Nashville perhaps, they'd say, okay, well, we still need to improve X or work on Y, because it is just so early in the season and things aren't exactly where they should be for any team. But the Hurricanes right now are putting it together consistently enough and seeing results. And that three-game slide that the team went on, that, you know, Rod Brind'Amour tried to pump the brakes on it after the loss here to Colorado, saying that the process was there. And it's more so for him about how they win or lose, rather than if they win or lose. And how they were losing wasn't that they were getting blown out or they weren't getting severely outworked or outskated. They just weren't quite getting the bounces. And we could talk about maybe how the team looked perhaps a little slower in Tampa Bay. I think the travel might have caught up with them.
Especially in that third period, I think it really did, Michael.
And I want to say, too, the three-day gap in between games maybe affected the Hurricanes more playing Colorado. I think Colorado had some more jam, had some more speed, and they're good. They're good. That's a good team. And I think the Hurricanes didn't look quite as good against Colorado, but Monday against Detroit last night, which is why we're delivering this podcast to you here on Tuesday, October 23rd, I thought the Hurricanes looked as good as they have really all season long. They were all over Detroit. They were relentless on the forecheck. They possessed the puck. They controlled play. They did everything that their identity is about, and they walked out of there with 2 points.
All right, here's the real check for everyone here. That Colorado game was the worst game that I think that the Canes played all year. I mean, if you go from opening faceoff to final whistle, I think to a man, they'll tell you that was, of the nine games, that was the effort that's at the bottom. And that is a concern. But they come back and do exactly what Michael just said. Monday night in Detroit, put out an incredible effort. And I want to reference those two games specifically for everybody who's wondering, where did the offense go? You know, the 8-5-5 when they beat the Rangers, and then they find a way to beat Vancouver, and then they go into Minnesota and dominated the Wild. Remember, that game, I think, was only 2-0 after 40, and it ends up 5-4 in overtime for the Hurricanes. But, you know, where do the 18 goals in three games go when you then go, what, 1-2-1 in the next three? And, yes, you score three against Detroit. First off, you're not going to score 5 goals a game in this league anymore.
Right.
It'd be great if you could. But Rod Brind'Amour said it after the game on Saturday against Colorado, what he needs out of his team, which is what Colorado gets. When Colorado's A players get an opportunity, they bury it. The Canes A players still have that struggle of burying those grade A chances. And that's why you get some of these games. And for people sitting here going, well, this kind of looks the same as last year, I don't think you're watching it the same way that everybody else is. Because to me, Michael, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I've got the rah-rah sunglasses on this one, and I don't mean to do that, but it looks different to me when I watch it. When I go back and watch it, because yes, I go back and watch it, it looks different. They are playing faster. They are playing, I don't want to use the term smarter, I think I'm going to use the term they're playing freer. They're playing looser. And if they make a mistake, yeah, it's going to lead to two-on-ones, but at least they're going to be aggressive, and they're going to the net. Now they just got to find a way to cash in these opportunities and get a little bit more jam in front of the opposition's goaltender. They do that, a couple other guys step up their game, things are going to be really good. But if we're sitting here talking about how Michael Ferland has 6 goals through 9 games, Sebastian Aho's on a 9-game point streak, which is a Carolina Hurricanes record, and 2 away from the franchise record set by Ron Francis in Hartford of 11, points are coming for this team. You know, they haven't been shut out. I don't think that there's a point where I'm sitting here outside of opening night against the Islanders where I was really concerned about them not putting points on the board.
Or the Colorado game, that late goal for Lynn's goal.
I had a feeling that they were going to get a goal. It was just a matter of time, because sometimes, folks, the other goalie is really good. And Philip Grubauer, really good. I think that the, oh my God, Laurent Brossoit looked like, you know, Patrick Waugh against the Carolina Hurricanes in Winnipeg, that was concerning. But you were in the MTS Bell Centre place, whatever it
yes,
is now.
Nailed
place.
It.
I think it's place
yeah,
now.
Yeah, place.
You were there. The Canes, who just played the night before in Minnesota, were the better team for 40 minutes, but they couldn't find a way to beat Brossoit. Yes, concerning, but not an, oh my God, the sky is falling, we need to shake everything up.
Yeah.
Except for there was one thing where there was concern. And I think that that got addressed in Detroit, and that was special teams.
Right. It does look different to me as well. And I think we talked about it on the podcast too, but going back to the offensive production, is it seems, at least in the past few seasons, the trend has been early on, you see these insane scores, whether it's 8-5 or 7-6, or, you know, teams are putting up 30, you know, combining for double digit goals, and it tightens up. And I think that's, you're going to continue to see it tighten up as the season goes on, because coaches are going to start to learn tendencies of other teams. The game is going to get tougher as the season goes along, and Rod Brind'Amour sort of hinted at that last night in his post game press conference when he said, you know, guys are doing what it takes to win, and now the challenge is to continue doing that and do it in game 30, game 40, game 50, because that's when it really gets tough. But the fact that the Hurricanes have been able to push through the adversity that they faced so far this season, and, you know, let's put the adversity into perspective. It was a 3-game losing streak against, you know, losing to a team in Winnipeg who's now 6-2-1.
Playoff team, maybe a potential Stanley Cup team.
Losing to a team in Tampa Bay who's 5-1-1.
Playoff team and potential Stanley Cup team because they're coming out of the East. Winnipeg's out of the West.
And losing it in Raleigh to Colorado, who is now 6-1-2 after they beat Philadelphia last night.
Concerning, because you want to win on home ice against a team like Colorado,
yeah.
But a playoff team last year and a team that's getting better, it seems, every single game, with the exception of Boston, maybe the best line in hockey.
Yeah, so it's three really good teams, and then you look at last night against a team that had just won its first game of the season the other night in Florida against, I believe, point-wise, the worst team in the NHL right now. The Hurricanes went to Detroit, they dominated that game, and they took care of business, and that's what good teams do. They beat the teams that they should beat. The Hurricanes should have beaten Detroit last night, and they did just that. The score, I think, was a bit closer if you just were to take a quick glance at the box score and see, oh, 3-1, it's, you know, it was kind of close, but it wasn't really that close at all. Carolina dominated that game, and they got rewarded on specialty teams, which has been the one stain, I think, on this team early
harsh
in the
word.
Season.
It's going to go bugaboo.
Stain.
Yeah. Blemish.
Blemish. Concern.
Sure. Those all work.
Thorn in the side.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
Sticky wicket, if we're going to be British.
Yeah, that's just been the one thing. When you look at the team's entire game, that's been the one concerning point. But as Rod Brind'Amour said last night, it's nice to see that while the specialty teams hasn't performed up to where it needs to perform, it was ranked last in the league, both power play and penalty kill, yep, heading into last
night's
game.
I think the PK was tied for last, and the power play was last.
It's good to see that even through those struggles, it wasn't affecting the Hurricanes' 5-on-5. The Hurricanes' 5-on-5 play was still solid. They just needed to figure out how to make the specialty teams better. And Monday night in Detroit, they did that, but now the challenge is to continue it. Justin Falk said last night, they can't be satisfied with a good performance from the power play and the specialty, or power play and penalty kill in one night. They have to turn around and do it again on Friday against San Jose, do it again on Sunday against the Islanders, and just continue that forward movement. And that's the challenge that's in front of the Hurricanes. But I like what I saw last night in Detroit. It's encouraging signs. That's the Hurricanes' identity is last night's game in,
yeah,
Detroit.
Absolutely.
That's the team's identity. When they're on their game and playing well, that's the type of game you're going to see from them every night.
Yeah, and again, folks, it's game 9 with a team that has, 12 new players on the roster from last year?
Something like that.
Give or take. So half the roster is new. A brand new head coach who's a head coach for the first time at this level, at this capacity. There are going to be some bumps. There's going to be some stumbles. But that's going to happen to every single team. I mean, you run down the order, you got to get things figured out. And we said it, I think, on last week's podcast. I think I said it. Once they get the power play and penalty kill figured out, and I think in particular it was power play at the time, look out. This team is going to go. And last night, the thing that has been the hindrance for the Hurricanes during the 3-game losing streak was the reason why they beat the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah.
Their power play and their penalty kill was the reason why they won. And look, not all is great, because when you're putting 41 shots on goal, how much of it is quantity? How much of it is quality? How much of it is it you've got time to shoot, but you're putting it right into the logo of the goalie? Or you shot your shot, and it hits a stick and deflects to the left? Or, you know, the goaltender does make an unbelievable save. Some of those things happened during that losing streak. And some of those things happened last night. Jimmy Howard made some big saves, but there were a couple of times. And Dougie Hamilton, who you just see it building every game, you know, he's thinking top corner, and Jimmy Howard makes a great save on him with the glove. And then sometimes you have players who are just, you know, loading up, especially on the power play. The funny thing for the power play for me was how fast Rod Brind'Amour wants them to play. The power play looked too slow, too deliberate, like trying to make the perfect pass, Michael, instead of just playing. It's no. I can't shoot it because we don't have the layers that we need right now, instead of maybe shooting is the play. Or I got to shoot because we're not getting pucks on net, when the play is to send the puck through the box and try to reverse where the PK is stacked up against you. But look, it's not perfect. But if you would have told me the Hurricanes with this schedule would be 2 games above NHL 500, which they are, I would take that right now with a big homestand coming up with San Jose, the Islanders, and the Boston Bruins.
To wrap up the month of October.
Which Wyatt asked in episode 62, where is October gone? There's 3 games left in this month as we record episode 62. What happened to October? Or what's happening in October?
Yeah.
A lot of good things are. All right, and let's do this. I'll put you in the fan mode for a second.
Okay.
How concerned were you with the 3-game losing streak?
Not that much.
Neither was I. And I'm sorry to cut you off, but neither was I. And to see the overreaction, and I get it because of what's happened for 9 years, totally get it. Totally valid. Understood. But it's different. It is just watching this year, it's a way different feel than how this team has lost in games before. You talked about it. How many times this year, certain games, you're like, oh, that would have been it. Game over. And this team has fought back, shown some resiliency. So, again, as I ask you a question and cut you off, I'll probably cut you off again.
Well,
why weren't you worried?
The Winnipeg game, a late mistake in the third period goes the other way. That's the game-winning goal. After beating the Minnesota Wild in overtime the night before, chalk it up, hey, no big deal. Tampa Bay, I think the travel, flying in late from Winnipeg.
A mistake late on the PK.
Yeah, and the PK had been good before that in the game. And it was just a simple mistake of just fanning on a clear, you know. It's and then it ends up in the back of your net. So, you know, chalk that up to, okay, that might have been the first game where the Hurricanes didn't quite have their legs, but against a very good team again. The Saturday concerned me a bit because the Hurricanes did have time to recoup, but I didn't think they were skating at the pace that they usually skate, especially compared to last night in Detroit, where I thought the Hurricanes were far and away the quicker team. And some of that has to do, too, with the fact that Colorado is a very good team. Detroit is struggling and perhaps will continue to struggle. But it's taking a step back from that and looking at the season as a whole, looking at that three-game stretch, I wasn't too concerned because the team knew what it had to do. The team knew it had to stop the slide. After winning four games in a row, they lost three games in a row, and Justin Williams said, look, the key is to just not let it snowball. And the Hurricanes were able to do that. They parked it. They came out Monday in Detroit and put forth one of their better efforts of the season, just absolutely dominating the play. And it was good to see the specialty teams be a big part of that victory. And the Hurricanes needed it because for whatever reason, the 5-on-5 game, while good, couldn't connect and beat Jimmy Howard. The Hurricanes scored all of their goals either on the power play or shorthanded. So their 5-on-5 scoring wasn't there, but their specialty teams was able to pick them up. And they needed that. They really needed that because at the end of the first period, or going through the first period, the Hurricanes had dominated play. The Red Wings had a couple good chances. The first shot of the game they had was actually a pretty good chance. Mrazek made the nice pad save.
Yeah, after Peter Mrazek sat there for about 12 minutes without seeing a shot on goal.
Yeah, it was six minutes, 30 seconds left in the first period that they got their first shot. And the crowd, it was a pretty big Bronx cheer. And then the second shot was a dump in from beyond the red line that, had it not bounced in on Mrazek, would have been an icing, but instead counted as a shot on goal, and they cheered it just as loud. And then his fourth save of the game was a stop on Abdelkader, who snuck in behind the defense and had a breakaway. So after dominating that period, there were a couple quality scoring chances for the Red Wings, and Peter Mrazek was sharp. And I think it would have been a mental challenge for the Canes to go into the locker room after the first period tied or in a scoreless game with a 0-0 game. So for Justin Falk to break through on the power play there and give the Hurricanes that 1-0 advantage, to at least give them a tangible reward for what they had done on the ice, was, I think, the thing that kick-started the rest of the game. They came out in the second period much of the same. They came out in the third period dominated for, I think, the first 5 minutes to 10 minutes. The Red Wings, of course, desperation mode, pushed back, got the goal to cut their deficit in half, but the Hurricanes had the wherewithal to shut it down. Two big penalty kills late, and of course the shorthanded empty net goal to seal the victory. So,
and Justin Falk with a huge save as well.
Yes. He had a power play goal and a game-saving stop.
Exactly. I mean, so, you know, the goalie's best friend are the pipes and a defenseman who's willing to play goalie when the goalie is in a weird sequence, yes.
It was just insane because Mrazek started it off with a great save on Franz Nielsen, and then Falk's, you know, wherewithal to slide into the crease and just throw his body in front of the puck, hoping that, you know, the shot would hit him, and it did somewhere near the right knee, inner thigh area.
And some help that Michael Rasmussen throws it right back into Peter Mrazek.
Right back into Peter Mrazek, and then the whistle to blow the play dead. That, you know, that very easily could have gone the other way, but you like to think that the Hurricanes earned those bounces and earned, you know, the whistle to blow the play dead, and that's all that happened. It was a highlight reel sequence for them instead of the other way.
Well, you know what? It could have gone different, but you know what? It didn't. And the Canes got the win. Mm-hmm. And then Jacob Slavin makes an unbelievable play with more help in front of that. You had a block from Jordan Staal, then an unbelievable block from Brock McGinn with a 6-on-4, with Jimmy Howard pulled for Detroit. And then Jacob Slavin just picks up the puck and does, you know, a little Pele move from the movie Victory. I go like this. And then he passes the puck off for Jordan Martin, a goal.
Yeah.
And there's a shorty for you, everybody.
He shoved off two Red Wings and then dangled around a third to skate the puck out of his own zone. And
it is funny to me how people – we knew this a couple of years ago, but how people are picking up on exactly how good Jacob Slavin is at that position and what he does, and when it comes to crunch time, what he's able to do. Is he ever going to be a guy who scores 15 to 20 goals from the blue line or puts up 65 points? I don't know, but he's going to be a guy who just does everything great. And you know what, Michael? I think maybe last year wasn't the best season he had as a pro, but this year he's been great in just about every game.
Yeah, he's rounded back into form, and he's consistently playing 22, 23, 24 minutes a night.
And this whole defense has, too. Like I told you a few moments ago, Dougie Hamilton is a half an inch away from breaking down the dam and going on a run. Just yes. I go back and watch. He is so close to getting a goal for this team. And, I mean, it would be great if he could get it on the power play, but just whatever. Calvin Hahn just is a human plus. That's just what he is, what he's done. I like Justin Falk's adjustment to the role. I get questions all the time, like, how is he adjusting to the role? Fine. He's fine being an alternate captain, and that goal last night was an absolute laser, reminiscent of a few seasons ago when all he did was score on the power play with that, you know, weapon that he's got from the blue line. And then Trevor Van Riemsdyk has been just steady. You can put him wherever you want to. And by the way, I did talk to Trevor Van Riemsdyk on Sunday after he put on an offensive display at practice. And he goes, yeah, it's still in there somewhere. So, you know.
It's just waiting to come out.
Exactly. It's just, it's a good balance right now on that blue line. And the other thing why I'm not concerned is the Canes haven't been blown out of any game.
No.
You know, they have, we could sit here and you can make a case, maybe not Colorado, because they weren't blown out. But the Colorado game felt like how the Detroit game felt last night for me, where the Canes were in complete control of it. Colorado was pretty much in complete control of the game on Saturday. That's the only one. You can make the case that the Canes should have 8 wins this year. Can make a case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's out there. But, folks, I get it, but I'm going to quote Aaron Rodgers. R-E-L-A-X. Relax.
No.
It's early, and things are going to get better.
I didn't know if you were going to spell respect.
No, I don't know how to spell that.
I guess that would have been quoting Aretha Franklin.
And you could find out what that means to me if you know where we're going.
Quoting Aaron Rodgers, quoting Aretha Franklin. Right. I don't know if he's ever said that.
I don't know.
But he has now.
Well, on Welcome to Canes Cast, episode 62. Fact check that with the Web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
All right.
And speaking of TV, drifting off for a second, last night in Detroit, a unique perspective for yourself, between the benches. And it's one thing to be between the benches here because you're separated sort of from both teams' benches. But in Detroit, it's a bit different because they come out basically right at center ice, and that's where they have you positioned in between the benches. So you're basically on the Detroit team bench.
There are times I'm working the door for the Detroit Red Wings. The way that it's set up, just for a point of reference, for being in between the benches at PNC Arena, which I'll be for the Islanders game coming up, and I love it. I love that perspective. They remove the glass in between, and it's not glass, everybody, but they remove the glass from the Canes bench to the little cubby area that I stand in, but they keep the opponent's glass up. So whatever. It's the opposite when I'm in Detroit. Mm. So I can hear everything that the Red Wings are saying, and I got to kind of crane my neck around to find out what the Canes are saying, but
then
it's an interesting
pass along game secrets to.
That's what I try to do.
I'm
take the microphone and I'm just kind of holding it towards the Red Wings bench when they're talking about, you know, have a reverse, forget taking shots from the point. We got to get the puck in on the goalie. I'm like trying. I'm doing hand signals. I'm not. But you get a lot of access. The funny thing was that first period, the Red Wings bench was dead. Mm. They weren't talking at all. The only people talking were Jeff Blashill, their head coach, Dan Bylsma, who's an assistant coach right now, and Doug Huda, their assistant coach who's in charge of the defense. Players were lifeless, just sitting there. And, I mean, let's face it, they looked lifeless the first 12 minutes of the game.
Lifeless.
So it's an interesting perspective. But once you're there and the players kind of see that you're there and, you know, they know what I'm doing, I got my job to do, some guys will talk, some guys won't, some guys are fine. But there was one situation I could pass along. I can't really do it on the broadcast because we're really Canes focused on Fox Sports Carolina. It makes sense, right? But in this situation, a Red Wings player took a puck off of the foot, and it hurt him. It stung him. And, you know, if you're Joe Hicketts, who is 5'8", 180 pounds, and he took it right off of the boot, you know, he tries to walk it off, and you hear trainers say things because there's only so much you can say, like, rub some dirt on it, walk it off, and it's kind of funny. He gets back to the bench, and he's looking at me because he's got to sit in a sideways now, not facing the ice, and looking, and I go, how you feeling? So maybe I can get a little bit of scoop and run that back up. I'm like, hey, Joe Hicketts' foot isn't feeling good. Don't know if he's going to return to the game for Detroit, guys.
Right.
He goes, it's okay. Well, it hurts. He goes, badly. And then he looks up and he goes, at least I didn't get it in the face. And he looks up and his front four teeth are missing. So,
yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good little story I can share there. So
that's the inside the glass perspective.
Exactly. I love it. I love being down on the ice. Cannot wait for Sunday. And I believe for the Boston game, Shane Willis is going to be in between the benches as well, joining Fox Sports Carolina. So
you and Shane, or
no,
just
Shane?
Shane. Okay.
Just Shane. It'll be a very special edition.
Kind interesting.
Of a four-man booth, if you will. But I'm really more than just the reporter for games like that. So I'll be in my customary spot.
That building in Detroit, too, is one of my favorites to visit. They did a tremendous job. The press box, the gondola style, affords a great view of the ice. I mean, you're practically right above it, and I think some people noticed in the pictures that I tweeted last night, you are practically right above the ice, but it gives you just a great vantage point of what's happening below you. The technology that the building uses with the LED ceiling and the video board and then the press meal is probably the best in the league. Oh, I mentioned food. Sorry, Billy.
No, so we're not going to dwell on it, but I will concur.
Yes.
So I don't take the press meal at every
aside from
arena.
Our press meal, of course, because we do have to give high marks to the folks here.
The Olympics, the Hurricanes have set the gold standard for the press meal.
Right.
So it's the Hurricanes, used to be Tampa, who we just visited.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was like everybody, now Detroit might leapfrog Tampa.
Yep.
If you're listening, Tampa, bring it back up to where it was.
Step up your game.
Step up your game, kids. Speaking of stepping up the game, injury front to report on. Victor Rask is skating, but he's not doing any drills with a hockey stick after slicing the tendons in his right hand. But
he still can't put a glove on that hand, so I think
he's a while away from
people
playing.
People see that he's skating, and that's good, but he's not that close.
No, but the encouraging thing is that he is skating, and you know that's a big way that you got to start building your conditioning back up. And I just feel terrible for Victor Rask because, again, I thought that he had a great summer.
Yeah.
And he came into camp, and he was looking good, and he was looking to be a factor on this team. And then, you know, he cuts his fingers. And
freak accident. But it is going to be a challenge for him because he's going to be, whenever he enters back into the lineup, the league's going to be going.
Yep.
And his challenge is going to be jumping right in to that pace, not having the benefit of ramping it up in training camp or even the first week or so of the season. He's going to have to kick it into another gear right off the bat. But the Hurricanes aren't going to rush him, I don't think. You don't want to rush something like that.
I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a couple of games down in Charlotte.
Good. Just to get his legs
just
back
to get
under
him. Timing back. More so than the legs, because I think he'll have fresh legs, Michael, because he's not going to be banged up from taking hits and blocking shots during the course of the season. I don't know how his hand is going to respond because you cut tendons, and that's a lot of physical therapy to get your hand back in working order the way it needs to be. I think it's more the timing of taking passes, making passes, getting shots off, things like that. So
feeling the game.
We'll see if that's it. But I think he'll come in with fresh legs. But everything that you checked on those boxes, those are concerns.
Speaking of feeling the game, Scott Darling's going to do that with the Charlotte Checkers. On Wednesday night, he's expected to make a rehab start in Utica.
The Comets.
Yeah, the Utica Comets. And if all goes well there, they're the AHL affiliate of the Vancouver Canucks, I believe. Unless that's changed in the last few years.
I'll research. We'll get
fact check that.
Get our people on it.
He's going to make a rehab start on Wednesday in Utica with the Checkers. More of a mental trip for him just to ensure that he can get through a game, feel that he's physically up to the challenge of returning to the crease, because remember, he's been on the shelf for about 3 weeks now, suffered that lower body injury in the Hurricanes preseason finale against the Nashville Predators. A really unfortunate, any injury is unfortunate, but especially for Scott Darling, who put in so much work during the summer to trim down and get back to a place where he could be a peak performer. I thought he looked really good in the preseason. I'm anxious to see what he can do here for the Hurricanes in the regular season, but he'll make that rehab start Wednesday, and then if all goes according to plan, he could potentially rejoin the Canes in time for their Friday home game here against San Jose, and perhaps make a start then, or perhaps it's Sunday. But if all goes well and he rejoins the team, it's then up to Mike Bales and Rod Brind'Amour and the coaching staff to just figure out when is best to reinsert him back into the crease. I know he's anxious to get going. But you definitely want to make sure that he's physically where he needs to be, especially with this type of injury. It's just, you don't want to re-injure it and be faced with a situation where he's on the shelf for longer.
Yeah. One, you're right, it is Vancouver. Well, I fear the Canucks is your AHL affiliate in Utica, New York.
That's a long trip. That is
a long trip, kids.
Not a 3-hour drive down I-40 for the Hurricanes and the Checkers.
No, but everything that you just talked about with Scott Darling, I think that's the key. Rod Brind'Amour talked about it. You're giving him a rehab start, one on the mental side, to get back into taking shots in a game, and then two, see how he comes out of it physically. So we'll see if he's ready. And I know the plan would be, Michael, I think if he gets the A grade Wednesday night, and by the way, the A grade doesn't even mean that he wins or gets a shutout, just means that he plays well and gets through the game injury free. I wouldn't be shocked if we see him play this weekend, maybe Friday against San Jose.
Yeah, that would be nice too, to see those. He sported those black pads the other day during practice. They're gonna look pretty sick with the third jerseys.
You would think so.
That would be Friday if he would return and start Friday, but that's that might be getting ahead of ourselves a little bit.
Yeah, it's a touch ahead of where we're at right now.
In the meantime, I think Peter Mrazek has looked, to me, I think he's looked very good, and he got rewarded with the win on Monday night in Detroit. His return to the city where he spent, he was there from 2013 to 2018 playing in, I think it was 166 games for the Red Wings. Was their starter in the 2015-16 season, helping to lead them to a Stanley Cup playoff berth. And I think you look at his last three games, even though he's only won one of them, I think he's been really sharp in net. And last night, as we've talked about already, he did not see a shot for the first almost 14 minutes of the game, just sort of had to bide his time. Then once he saw a couple shots, they were quality scoring chances, and he responded with some sharp saves. He was big down the stretch on the penalty kill, with his teammates pitching in a bit as well. And he finally got rewarded with a win last night, so that was good to see. He's been good. And once Scott Darling gets back, if the Hurricanes choose to go with Darling and Mrazek as their tandem, I think they'll be set for a good season.
But for the goalie question, what will they do?
Right.
I think that you can – there's no law that says you can't carry three goaltenders.
Correct.
I think that they will carry three goaltenders for a little bit.
You might as well. Because if Scott Darling, you don't want to see this happen, but if he were to re-injure himself, or even if Peter Mrazek or even Curtis McElhinney gets injured, you have the bodies there to where you're not put in a position where you're scrambling to find a goaltender. So, yeah, I don't think it would be a bad idea to keep three goaltenders around for maybe a few games, just to make sure you can get through those first few and be in a good position.
Yeah, that's it. So,
but
again,
other than that, Rod Brind'Amour said it's not a viable long-term option to keep three goaltenders. We've been over it. It's that practice time. You're splitting reps. It just doesn't make sense.
Somebody's not getting the work that they need to when you carry three goaltenders in the NHL, because there's only two nets on the ice.
Yeah.
Breaking news, folks.
Very
brought that to you right here, courtesy of the Canes Cast. In case you didn't know the rules, only two nets on the ice. That's it. You're welcome.
It might change one day.
Maybe.
You never know.
Some people have ideas. But you're welcome, America. There's your rules update brought to you by Canes Cast.
A third net and a second puck.
Let's get that sponsored.
It's coming next.
Rules that you should have known, but we're going to tell you anyway. Brought to you by The Web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco here on Canes Cast, which still, you know, available for sponsors.
Sure. Or even in show sponsors, if you don't want to sponsor the whole show. Good with everything.
We've got segments.
Speaking of.
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
Well, I know where this is going. I'll let you begin.
Oh, well, of course, because why would you have one? Seriously, man. I knew that you didn't.
You can sponsor this bit where I never have anything. Sponsor could submit. Ooh.
You all right over there, buddy?
I'm a little hungry.
Did you not have breakfast today?
I had some coffee.
Yeah, that's a beverage, not necessarily
breakfast
of a meal.
Champions.
Well, I'm on my breakfast here at noon. I'm having a water.
Yep. Same.
So,
cheers.
Oh, good to you. Here, cheers. Take care of that.
Dink. Clink.
All right. So, I'm going to just throw this here because as October is coming to an end, these three games are pretty important before a massive four-game road trip. Believe the second longest trip of the year, right?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, that's
it. In days or games?
I think in games.
Yeah, I think there's a five-game trip.
That's why. So, Arizona to Vegas, back-to-back. A couple of days in Vegas, then St. Louis, where I've been told they appreciate you more.
Yes.
And then Chicago, where they see a familiar face in Cam Ward. So, before we go there, if you like it, keep it. If not,
send it right back.
The Canes with San Jose, the Islanders, and Boston will go 2-1 in these three games at home. San Jose, you know, the super team, the all-star team that got put together and wasn't going to lose a game this year after they acquired Erik Karlsson.
They're figuring it out.
Oh, yeah. Get them now.
Slowly but surely.
Get them now.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Where do the wins come? The Islanders, I hate to say it, but Islanders, we're putting you up there for the free lunch.
Yeah, weird, too, that the Islanders come here twice within the span of, what, 2.5 weeks, and that's all. The Hurricanes will be up in both Brooklyn and Long Island this season. Islanders, yes, a win. I think the Hurricanes can beat San Jose on Friday, and then Boston will be the toss-up.
Well, San Jose is in a weird road trip.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing Nashville.
Yes.
Then they're playing here.
Which I believe is that game called by
John Forslund, absolutely.
On NBC Sports.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hi, Dottie.
They come across and play Nashville and then play Carolina and then
fly back across the country and play Anaheim.
That's an interesting road trip. Yeah, I think the Hurricanes, they're 2-0 in their black jerseys. Could they make it 3-0 on Friday?
They've always fared well in that alternate jersey.
Yep.
I don't have the official number. I know you used to keep a tally of it.
Yeah.
But they are well above 500 in
the
alternate.
Well, and here's
the
question, too. I think you have to start a new tally. It's a new third jersey. It's
I'm
still black.
No, I'm fine with that. Whatever you want to do. I mean, we could just say the Royal We as the third jersey as its own entity being different from the home and the road. But then if you say that, you have to say when they made the changes to the road jerseys. I'm going for simplicity.
2-0 in the new jerseys, which, by the way, I thought looked really sharp on the road. I enjoyed the going back to the home white look and then the Hurricanes wearing their blacks. I think they look really sharp. And from what I've heard in the locker room, the players dig them quite a bit as well. So they'll be back in those on Friday against San Jose. And I think that's a winnable game. I think the Islanders are a beatable team, and I think Boston is the toss-up.
It's funny that you go in that direction. I think San Jose is figuring it out, and San Jose is looking at this road trip where, I hate to do this, if they're going to get one, they're thinking it's going to be here in Carolina because of who they have to play. I'd like to think that that's not the case, but the Sharks are starting to play better hockey. You know, as of the recording of this Canes Cast before the Nashville game, they're 4-3-1. That's 9 points. But they're
that's
plus
exactly what the Hurricanes were before Monday night's
exactly.
game.
That's but they're a plus five in the goals for goals against category. I think that the win's going to come against Boston because while Boston's very good, And Boston's record, they're better right now, 4-2-2 through eight games.
They're undefeated at home.
Well, they're not playing at home.
That's correct.
And Tuukka Rask has been a little shaky in the pipes. And I think we're going to see him. Could be wrong. But I think that the Canes can get on Boston and jump on them. So I think it's going to come. Two wins are going to be there.
So
you and I are just differing.
Yeah.
If the loss happens, who it's going to be against.
So if the Hurricanes do finish 2-1 on the homestand, that leaves them with a record of 7-4-1 in the month of October.
15 points.
And that's a vast improvement over what we've seen. I mean, I'd have to look back to compare, but I would venture to say the last 5 or 6 Octobers.
Can you finish for a second? I'll tell you the last 2 if you give me a moment.
Okay. Right. Fact ahead. Check that.
Thank you.
There he goes. Oh.
Running into things in my office.
Running into things as he slides back to retrieve his notes. If I had to think last year, I think the Hurricanes were maybe a game or two. I think actually right at Hockey 500 was last October. And before that, I think you're looking at very much sub 500. In October, there was the 06-2. Just stalling for time right now.
2 Octobers ago, 2-4-2, 6 points in 8 games.
2-4-2. There was an 06-2 there. 2013-14, maybe?
I don't go back that far.
No.
Last year, Mr. Smith, they were 4-4-2.
Yep, right at Hockey 500.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's been...
So, 2-4-2 and 4-4-2.
It's been a while. And I believe before that might have been the 06-2. So, you're talking a handful of years since the Hurricanes could put together an October like this one. And that completely changes the dynamic of the rest of the season. Because now you enter into November, where you're in a good position in the standings. And there's always the thing of, where are you at Thanksgiving? If the Hurricanes continue on this trajectory...
We debunked that last year.
Well, but even still, if the Hurricanes continue on this trajectory, they're going to be in certainly a fine place by Thanksgiving, where the years before they dug themselves in so much of a hole in October that it was almost impossible to work out of it in November and beyond. So... Hey, 2-1 on this homestand would set the Hurricanes up for a very successful, I would say, October. Even at 1-2 on the homestand. I mean, I don't want to lower expectations because Rod Brindamore has talked about this.
Oh, I'd love to see him go 3-0, but realistically, right. I mean, 2-1 with these three teams coming up, I think would be very good to close out October. And as you mentioned, to put together that October for the Carolina Hurricanes, if you were to tell me that the Canes would be 7-4-1 after this October, yeah, take it. Let's go. Let's pack it up, 15 points, and let's get ready for November and the road trip.
Yeah,
I know you don't have one. I'm not even going to have you stall.
I sort of shoehorned that one in, 7-4-1 October.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'd both take it.
Oh, absolutely I would.
It's not being left.
No, it's not a like
we're taking that, and we're leaving with it.
All right, let's get to the listener tweets.
I think we've got a couple.
Yep. Well, this comes from Happy Mom. Anyone else hate these long breaks in between games? I feel it breaks up consistencies. The answer is yes, everybody does, and everybody's schedule is garbage.
But it allows us to record a CanesCast.
It does. I mean, we would have found out a way anyway.
That's true.
No, this drives me crazy for a couple of reasons, Mr. Smith, because then you see a schedule where you're going to play 4 games in 9 days. And you're like, what are you doing? Why do we have 3 days off in October or 4 days off in November for no particular reason? But that's everybody's schedule. If you take a look at it, it really truly is.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
All right. So quirks, you agree with that?
Quirks abound.
All right.
I actually really don't mind the schedule this year. I mean, there are, as always.
Oh, the travel. I think the travel's perfect this year. But when you get the, you know, why are we not playing today kind of things, those are the, I think, the questions that a lot of the fans have.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This one comes in. How do you think the guys will continue to adjust the PK and power play units with tonight's sharp performance? That would be last night against Detroit. The confidence levels must be skyrocketing. That is from Yamazam of Azura. Kaniac Sam. I have no idea. That's got to be
something. I think you nailed it.
All right. Sure. I don't think they're going to change anything after how successful they were in Detroit.
I mean, you looked at even through the troubles that the Hurricanes were having on the power play, they didn't change a whole lot. The personnel was the same, but the combinations were a little different. And that's the Hurricanes had adjusted the combinations of the two units, and it seemed to work pretty well last night in Detroit. They got positive results from it. But even before that, there wasn't a lot of tinkering that was happening other than just making sure that the Hurricanes were running through their set plays, were taking their time, they were relaxing, they weren't forcing shots, because that's what Rod Brindamore pointed to as the issue, as they were trying to take 5-on-5 shots on the power play. The team needed to relax, take its time, set up, and then you saw last night Sebastian Aho, Valentin Zhikov, Michael Ferland, tic-tac-toe, and a goal.
That's hockey, baby.
That's pretty.
Since we've already quoted our good friend John Forsen.
Yes.
And this one from Arrowfish1 or Jay. Last question, by the way, on CanesCast. Do you think
ever?
For this episode?
Okay.
Thank you. Do you think the Canes update the road jersey to match the home jersey next year? Surprised they didn't when Adidas introduced. Would love to see the white jersey with the warning flags on the hem again. Maybe completely new set of home and road since Tom Dundon is now owner. Possibly.
Possibly. There are certain restrictions when you redesign uniforms, how often you can redesign them. You can't redesign them every year. Not sure what the exact time frame on it is. It might be 2 years. Once you introduce a new jersey, you can't change that jersey for 2 seasons. So there are certain restrictions, but I'm sure it's something that if Tom Dundon, the owner, wants to see explored, then the team will explore it.
There you go. All right. That's all I got.
That's all I've got.
Good stuff, Mr. Smith.
Yeah, good stuff. I hope the listeners enjoyed this, and I hope Bill Burniston enjoyed it as well.
By the way, we're going to say goodbye to Bill Burniston. We went to Slo's in Detroit for barbecue. Very good.
Well, he was there, too.
I know. Well, but he's not going to want to hear us talk about food.
He didn't take pictures of what he ate, but we definitely took pictures of what we ate.
Hashtag yum. That's all you need to know.
Yep.
All right, we'll be back next week, and I do believe it will be a Monday release of the CanesCast, correct?
Yep.
Good.
Yep. After Friday against San Jose and Sunday against the Islanders, in between that final game of the homestand against Boston, we'll come at you with a new episode of CanesCast, episode 63.
Could be spooky. It'll be near Halloween.
Ooh.
Maybe.
A spooky episode.
Have we done a themed episode yet? You tried to give me the pirate one for Gasparilla.
Yeah, that was maybe the closest we've been.
Yeah, all right, well. You'll have to tune in next week and find out. For the Web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We will talk to you next week.
Goodbye.
Thank you.